Welcome back to Wrong Opinions Only, and Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, everybody. You're here with your hosts, Justin and Kayla, and this week, we are in the spirit. We are doing Christmas movies as a movie review week, because, come on, we're in the season. We got to just dive right into these, and frankly, I am very, very interested in Kayla's thoughts on the movie I gave her, so stick around for that one, folks.
You know what? This was an intentional theme beyond Christmas movies, but I really feel like we went for unhingedness in Christmas films, and I am also looking forward to your thoughts on the film I gave you. But I ask this question every time we do our Christmas movie review, Justin. Was this the first Christmas movie you happened to see this year, or have you already been starting the ball?
I think it was the first Christmas movie the first one I've watched kind of in the season. The one I gave you, I just happened to watch a couple months ago. So that just is how it happened. But we were waiting, my wife and I, for December, and then we've just been so busy we haven't watched any. But there's like so many in the queue that we probably will be just rolling through them the next week or so.
Yeah, this was definitely my first Christmas movie, and I say that tentatively. I probably only watch Christmas movies when I rap, because that just kind of gets me in the mood. And generally, I do all my rapping all together instead of making it easier on myself to do it in increments, because then I'm like, what did I get? Where's this gift? What did I get again? So I just suffer and spend a whole day rapping everything. But that's usually when I watch things. And it was funny to start with this film, too. But we're halfway through December when we're recording this, so pretty funny.
Wow, time has just flown by this year, especially the last couple months, Kayla. It still just seems like we're in November right now. And I just looked, and December 16th is when we're recording. This pod's coming out on December 25th, if I'm not mistaken. So right in time for you guys to open up your presents and listen to Justin and Kayla. That's what everybody wants to do Christmas morning.
Absolutely. Christmas morning, when the fire's roaring and you are making up Christmas dinner, nothing better than hearing the gentle voices of our reviews of Christmas movies. Okay, I can't keep doing that. I got to be loud.
Do you want to do the ASMR?
I can't. Not for long. Let's just...
Hello there, Kayla.
Oh, hey. Hey. Very sultry. Radio. That was a little radio talk. All right, let's talk about the movies that we gave each other, because I really feel like no one's going to predict the type of films that we did, in fact, give.
There is a 0% chance anybody, like if we just had a poll with every single person in America, I'd say there's 0% chance they get both of them right. Maybe one of them they could pick, but getting both of these, it's they're a little out there, but in my opinion, pretty fun.
And I give another reminder, we always have to give each other movies that the other hasn't seen. And that's why you're not seeing, the more popular big staples, one could say, is because everyone's already seen them. So it makes it more challenging, I will say, as years go by, but we found it. So Justin gave me the film Eyes Wide Shut, which is not available on streaming, but you can rent it and purchase it. And I gave Justin the film Violent Night, which is available on Prime. So, Justin, why did you give me Eyes Wide Shut? Which I gotta say, if you're making a numbered list of Christmas movies, I wasn't aware that Eyes Wide Shut would even be on it. But again, I hadn't seen the movie. So, Justin, why'd you give it to me?
So, I had a similar thought. I was like, it's Christmassy, but I didn't want to have the same situation as The Family Man a few years ago or 2 years ago when we did this, right? But every list I looked at had Eyes Wide Shut at the top. So I was like, this is clearly common knowledge. This is a Christmas movie. I rewatched some of the scenes, and it really carries the Christmas kind of theme throughout the movie. The reason I gave it to you is Stanley Kubrick, famous director, his last movie he put out. We have Cruise, we have Kidman. It's late 1990s, 1999. This is like the time that we just love to reflect back on these movies. And it's just insane. It's such a weird movie that I really wanted your thoughts on it. And since it has such kind of like a loaded cast and director, it is so well made for being just off the rails at the same time. It's just It's an interesting one to just kind of like discuss and break down on a podcast.
I don't want to step on my own review, but I'm very curious what you think this film touches on the theme of Christmas. What theme of Christmas is touching on?
It has more of a Christmas aesthetic to it, where you constantly are seeing the Christmas lights in the background. It gives you kind of that New York during Christmas time feel. The actual main themes of the movie, not so much Christmas, but it takes place around Christmas, and that is kind of like the backdrop of the entire film.
It's certainly not my Christmas, but I was curious. Maybe it was of a similar theme. That's funny. I gave you Violent Night because I, one, hadn't seen the film myself, and I had one idea of it, and I gotta say, when I did watch it, it was different than I expected. But to me, it was like John Wick meets Christmas, and so I didn't think it was a film that was going to take itself so seriously as maybe mine film was going to. So I just thought it might be like a very different Christmas film that you might be able to get into without like the high cheesy stakes of like a traditional Christmas film, you know. And so that's why I gave you Violent Night. So
yeah, definitely my first time seeing it, and obviously I'll get into it with my review, but not exactly what I was anticipating either. It was a little bit different, and you kind of just had to lean into it.
You did, yes, yes. All right, well, let's go ahead. I'm going to go into this eyes wide open with my review of Eyes Wide Shut. Here we go. All right, this film came out in 1999. What a great year, 9 years old at the time. Directed and written by Stanley Kubrick. Have you heard of him? Stars Tom Cruise, Nicole...
Stanley, what'd you say, Kayla?
Kubrick.
Yeah, okay. Well, you kind of... You were like... Kubrick.
I had a flair. I had a flair to it a little. Thank you for noticing. A Kubrick. A little French there. Stars Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, both married to each other at this time. Very important detail. Sydney Pollack, Marie Richardson, a lot of special guests coming in too as well. Had a budget of $65 million and made $162.1 million. Had a Rotten Tomatoes score of 76%. It won Best Foreign Film, and you may get confused at how it was a foreign film, but that was at the French Syndicate of Cinematic Critics, so that would be why it is a foreign film.
And it was mostly filmed in London,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct, for its New York City-ness. Fun facts. So it has a place in the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest constant movie shoot with a total of 400 days. And even though Cruise and Kidman had only committed to 6 months of filming, so it's hard to imagine that you're like, I'm going to give this film 6 months, and all of a sudden Tom Cruise has to delay Mission Impossible 2, which we've reviewed on this very podcast, in order to do this film because he felt absolutely I need to have this time with a director, you know, in the stance of Stanley Kubrick, which was important because that ended up being his last movie. So that was definitely a good decision. Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman slept in their character's bedroom and had it match their actual bedroom, I think, to kind of get in the mindset of their characters. And knowing how unhinged their characters are, that, I don't want to say it led to the disillusion of their marriage. I'm sure there were a lot of things going on, especially with Tom Cruise at the time. But to center it so much in their actual marriage a bit, and I'll go into that in some other fun facts, that is just, I could see how that could become an issue. It starts blending, I'll say that. Kubrick banned Cruise from the set when Kidman shot scenes with male model in several scenes in this film, and also forbid her from telling him about it. And I believe that was to try to get Tom Cruise in this like jealous, pained, you know, kind of bring it to real life as his actual wife and his wife in the movie was having these sexual scenes and he couldn't be told about it and wasn't able to watch it. So that is, again, wild to me. Some of the takes, I mean, Stanley Kubrick is famous for, you know, his filming style and just constantly editing, constantly reshooting. In fact, it took 96 takes for Tom Cruise to go through the door in a take that he was satisfied with. So just imagine, it kind of reminds me of Babylon when she's standing and saying that same line in the spot. He had to do it 96 times, just walking through a door over and over and over. That's just wild to me.
And part of the, and I'm sure we'll get into it in your actual review, kind of the reasoning behind some of Kubrick's decisions here and kind of the theories that go along with this movie. But part of this is the theory that he just wanted to kind of drill in to these actors like so many takes that they didn't even know how to play the characters. So they just did a whole bunch of different things so that he can kind of pick and choose what he wanted throughout the film, which is insane to do, but also pretty interesting when you watch the film again.
Oh yeah, it just, I mean, if you've seen a couple of Stanley Kubrick films, it's just so funny to hear the beats. I mean, literally the music when you have those chilling tones that you just associate with him. So I definitely found it a lot across this film. And of course, like I mentioned, Kubrick dies less than a week after showing the studio his final cut. So you never got to kind of see the success at the end. And it's always, you know, when a director dies young, it's always like what would have been, you know, the films across the years post this film in 1999, which started in 1996, the actual production of this film. So that says a lot, too. I mean, 4 years commitment on a film. I always enjoy hearing like directors on directors, if you ever watch that, from Variety. But it's interesting to say like a movie between the time that the audience gets the ads and the trailers, you're always like, oh, it's going to take like 6 months, 9 months for this to actually come out. Our poor hearts for Dune 2. But it's interesting as an actor or director or whoever you are on the set of these movies that it's not just like a year of time. Sometimes it can be just years sometimes before you see the final product of your film, which I think is just, you know, a wild job to be in, you know, where you work on something that long and sometimes don't ever see the fruits of your labor. Look at what's happening with Max too, where TV shows and movies filmed ready to go are just being dropped. So it may never see the light of day. So wild, wild times. All right. I think I have enough breath for this plot line that I did my best on, but this movie is wild. So here we go. Let me know when you're ready.
Yeah. It's over 2.5 hours, Kayla. So let's see how you're able to kind of pack this all into a quick breakdown. You're usually pretty good at it. So you ready for me to count you down?
Yes.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Dr. Bill Hartford and his wife Alice live in New York City, makes house calls for work, and at Christmas party reunites his old classmate Nick, who plays piano, and Alice flirts with a Hungarian guest, and Bill helps a lady from an OD who's having sex with his patient Ziegler. The next night they talk about unfulfilled temptations. Bill says he's not jealous of him flirting with Alice because women are naturally faithful, but Alice admits to fantasizing about a naval officer that they might consider leaving for. Bill is shook. Then random women attempt to seduce him in a variety of ways, and he almost goes there, but he doesn't because he's feeling a lot of guilt, and he's super jealous about Alice now admitting that she was fantasizing about someone. Then a random woman attempts to seduce him again and again. He attempts to go there, doesn't. He runs into Nick, who tells him about a secret party, and he sneaks his way in with a password and a costume and a mask, even though there's a weird 15-year-old girl who has sex with someone and then becomes into sex trafficking. That's also odd. He sees lots of naked women at this party, and then it gets found out, and a woman dies, and it almost seems like a cult. May still be a cult, could probably Nick for him. He's tormented by what's happened. He gets threatened. He gets chased. He's trying to find out what happened. He meets up with Ziegler, who confesses that he saw him at the party and saw that orgy was full of leads. He's in danger. If he ever saw what's happening, they would take action if the necessary return. So they're all fucked up. Bill confesses. Alice says they have to do something as soon as possible. He says, what do you mean? She's like, fuck.
Wow, Kayla. That was well done. I mean, I think the last 15 seconds, I heard about three words in there. You were going rapid fire. I have you timed as 1 minute. On the dot.
Wow.
Kayla. So well done.
Wow. That's one of our few on the dots.
You were 16-tenths of a second over. But, you know, okay. we'll let that go.
Yeah. My first few thoughts of the film. So I will say, like, I didn't know, like, what the ending was. But I did know, just because it's very hard not to know about this movie because the ending is so controversial, even still today people talk about it, and I heard that it ended abruptly. In my mind, I thought that meant like it just goes to black, like she says something and something goes to black. I'm kind of, it does do that, but it wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. That was really the only thing I knew about this film. Now, of course, I'm thinking about it in terms of Christmas, because when you had said it was a Christmas movie, I was like, I didn't know this to be a Christmas movie or on any list. So that was, but again, I didn't know the movie. I will say, I will give this more Christmas than The Family Man, because again, in The Family Man, the only Christmas scene is about 3 minutes at the beginning, and then it's a life movie. This movie at least has Christmas, like you're always knowing you're at Christmas time, although the movie plot itself does not have to do with Christmas, minus a mention of like going Christmas shopping and it's a Christmas party. But I will give this more of a throughout Christmas. And I see more of a hint of why this is Christmas. Now, I haven't seen Die Hard, but I think the question of Die Hard being Christmas movies that it happens at Christmas time. So I think like this is similar to Die Hard, I think, in terms of like is it Christmas, is it not? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you're pretty much right on track with that one. It takes place in Christmas. Christmas, like I said before, is kind of the backdrop of the entire film. So it brings a lot of the, it's the reason for why things are happening, but not like the main stuff. You know, it's, oh, he's going to this Christmas party. He's with his wife here. He's Christmas shopping. They're doing these things that are kind of dancing around Christmas, but it doesn't have those Christmas themes of, you know, love and family. It's more so the opposite of that most of the time. So it's absolutely insane. And the ending of this movie, I don't think you gave it enough credit, because the last line of this movie is Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise's characters are talking to each other after all this crazy shit has happened. And she mentions, which is what kind of brings a lot of the conspiracy theories out, we should be grateful that we survived our adventures, whether they were real or a dream. So right there, that throws into everybody's mind, oh, was this entire thing a dream sequence? Because it's so weird and out there, and Cruise is kind of the center of everything. So is it a dream?
I think you have that early, though. I wouldn't say like it took the end to be like, could this be real or not? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, like, the very last word. So the last word of any Stanley Kubrick movie ever is fuck. And the context is, and I looked up the scene again right before we got on, Nicole Kidman goes, there is something we need to do as soon as possible to Tom Cruise. And he goes, oh, what's that? And her response that ends the movie, fuck. Movie over. So the last word of any Stanley Kubrick movie is fuck, in Nicole Kidman saying that her and her husband need to get it on, essentially. So just absolutely hilarious kind of way to end that.
I wasn't mad at the ending because I knew it ended abruptly. So in my mind, when they're shopping and awkward and he's confessed all of the events that happened, him going to this orgy party and, you know, having all these almost attempts with other women and all this guilt he's having about potentially having 1 to 2 people killed because of what he did. And so he shook. She's like navigating. We're going to go into the Nicole Kidman of it all, but truly unhinged performance. But I'm no marriage counselor. I'm also not married. But in a world that this is like really happened between them all, she's just like, you know, we need to like rekindle our intimacy. So like, let's have sex, because we've been basically separated emotionally, mentally, physically by the idea of us cheating with people. Like, she maybe was upset by him revealing what he did based off her confession of fantasizing. And that was stemmed from also being irritated about how he was so cavalier about, like, you would never, you know, almost like you're not desired. Like, I told, like, her anger kind of in that moment, the beginning where, you know, they're high, they've been drinking, they're post-party. She's been, had like a fun seduction, kind of this older gentleman. Maybe she's missing something from Tom Cruise's character. He's always working, that type of thing. And she just, you know, like, it's almost like you want to say something and have a little fun jealousy, but Tom Cruise, Bill, is just so like, well, you would never cheat on me. So like, I'm literally not concerned when you talk to any man, anything, because women are faithful, like inherently faithful. And she gets so offended that she tries to, I think, hurt him. Again, this isn't believing this was all real in these moments, but that she fantasized about hooking up with someone they had met. And like the whole movie, he's flashing to her having sex with this naval officer. And yet he can't seem, it's almost like he can't commit to like hurting her right away. Like he does stare off into the void in the bed after she reveals this. And he has like all these women flock to him, which is not surprising because this is peak, I want to say, this is peak-ish physical Tom Cruise. To me, he looks great in this movie. Yeah, Nicole Kidman also looks great in this movie.
She is gorgeous. Holy
hell. Nicole Kidman. Older Nicole Kidman, and this has nothing to do with age. It does have to do with what she's done to her face, I think, because she was such an expressive actress to me. I love the Tom Cruise movie. They have another movie together, and if you ever saw it, called Far and Away, that was actually like where they met, and you know, that's how they got together, was from this movie. it's like set in Ireland. They both have like crazy Irish accents. I love this movie. But like, she's so like expressive, and I just feel like now Nicole Kidman like has the acting ability, but she's completely frozen in face. Go ahead, Justin.
Isn't she in Days of Thunder too with Tom Cruise?
I didn't see Days of Thunder. So
early 90s. That's another, like early on a Cruise movie. I'm pretty sure she's the love interest in that too. So they definitely knew each other before getting into Eyes Wide Shut, which honestly, it just the dynamic of them being married and having to film this movie together for a year and a half and just having to go through mm-hmm. that mental like exhaustion of it. I mean, that just seems like it'd be really tough to keep the marriage going on with how this movie turned out. And
especially and how
was it like 3 or 4 years later they got divorced or something?
Especially how like Kubrick's films are. Like, I mean, I'm not surprised like that dynamic, especially like I described some of the filming things he did, I think, to try to get Tom Cruise in that like mental space. You know, it's just wild to me. So I do love Nicole Kidman. She was great in this movie. I prefer young, like this version of Nicole Kidman, because like I said, 100%. The frozen face, 100%. I just can't. It's very hard for me to like appreciate her now.
Has anybody's physical appearance just taken such a perception hit since Nicole Kidman's weird clapping at the Oscars like 5 years ago? Like that's now all I see when Nicole Kidman nowadays is that, and it's just the most awkward, cringeworthy. And I'm like, oh man, Nicole Kidman. But when you look back at like 1990s, mm-hmm. Nicole Kidman, early 2000s, she's gorgeous. I think she's a much better actress back yes. in that time. But I mean, the fight scene early on in the movie where she is screaming and he's screaming and she does the whole like the high pitch, like when she's having her little titty squeeze.
Unhinged.
Like, I'm like, what is happening?
And you know, she's good at those weird roles. Like even what did the Northmen, remember that? Like,
yep.
That is that kind of like twist, like villainous twist, because she was very villainous in this movie. The craziest to me was when she woke up laughing from the dream as Tom Cruise is getting into bed, and she just like laughs as she tells him that she had this dream of her just having sex with all of these men. And she was delighted in laughter, thinking in the dream that he was watching her. And she was just so enthralled that he had to watch her have sex with all these men. Men, she couldn't even know the number of how many men she was having sex with. So, wild. Which
leads to the, like, this is probably a dream, because some of the dialogue in this movie, it's like people don't talk like that. Like that scene you just mentioned, I believe it's something along the lines of, I had sex with so many men. There were so many of them, lots of men I had sex with. I don't even know how many, so much sex, so many men. And you're like, what? Who talks like that? So it seems like he's in his own head of like worst case scenario. This is happening with my wife. And he just kind of is stuck to that. And that's kind of how the whole movie plays out, is his kind of quote unquote retribution for those thoughts.
Now, I did not know this was an erotic thriller when I saw this. Like, I knew this was a thriller. So it was like, at first I'm like, oh, wow, we could really do a lot of things in the 90s. And then you're just watching like all of the women naked in this like sex cult. And I was like, oh, wow, when was the last time we had a movie like this? Like, I can't see a movie like this happening in this way. Like, I don't know how many erotic thrillers there are to this like, but I was just like, wow, there's a lot of nudity in this film. I don't think we have like, I think it's different the way when we do have it, like sex scenes, but I just feel like as far as like the whole theme of the movie like this, I can't think of like the most recent here in the US, I'll say.
I think there was a stretch in time where it was like, mm-hmm. let's have just topless women in movies that'll drive like ratings or something, you know, get people to the theaters. We've definitely changed. Things are done a lot more tasteful nowadays, and it actually is part of the storyline. I think one of the reasons you have a lot of the nudity in this movie is you have Kubrick, who's a very respected director, so he's probably able to pull some more strings than a lesser-known director would have been able to. But I will say, and I don't know if this is controversial or common knowledge or what, but I don't think Tom Cruise is very good sexual actor at all. I just think like he sexually has no chemistry like in any movie he's ever done. It just feels awkward to me every time. Now, maybe that's just me, but what are your thoughts, Kayla?
Okay, this is interesting. Now, I will say Tom Cruise is one of our most charismatic actors. Like the charm is there. obviously he looks very good. He's very attractive. So like he has that, but you're right. When it comes to like actually getting to the bad, I don't know that Tom Cruise, again, I think he's a robot at this point. So I don't know when the chip kind of got into him or what, the aliens took over, but yeah, I think you're right. Even in this movie, literally there's women full bush cult like all around him, and he's just, you know, he's just a man who's, you know, traumatized by his wife, you know, revealing this fantasy she had. And it's like he looks almost beyond the women, even in this movie where you could say it's so sexualized of a plot with Tom Cruise at the center, where he's just all these women, he has all these opportunities to be sexual with these women. I mean, when all the women were naked in a circle and like the men had all these like hoods, I go, is this a cult, like a sex cult movie? I didn't know. Like, I almost was like, is this sci-fi? Like, is there an altar he's going to get set? Like, I thought the movie was taking a total like horror type theme at that point. Cause I go, what the fuck is this? Group orgy turned cult. Still Tom Cruise is
terrifying. Terrifying.
Yeah.
When he like walks in and they ask him for the password, I'm like, this is like, what the hell is going to happen? Is he got, like you said, is he going to be sacrificed? Is he going to be like tied up? Is he going to be murdered? Like, what is going to happen here? And yeah, it just kind of went in so many different directions. The first time I saw it, it was very much similar to you, where I had kind of an outline of, all right, I know there's like, the masks are very kind of popular. Like if somebody says, oh, an Eyes Wide Shut party, like jokingly, it's like, all right, so it's basically a sex party with everybody wears masks. Like I had that kind of concept in my mind, but I didn't realize it was as much of this kind of like orgy cult, like you said, like, which is what we end up finding, you know, Jeffrey Epstein style, to steal thoughts from another podcaster, but just absolutely insane movie, Kayla.
Yeah, definitely not without the realm of possibility, and also like some sort of version of this did happen in a way darker theme. You assume these women have agency, but maybe not, because one of the women essentially sacrificed herself for him so that he wasn't killed. But also like that's not even the theme, you know, like that party is infamous because of as he's walking around and people are having sex in a variety of ways and all this stuff, but that's not even like the main part of the film. It's so much in his, Tom Cruise's, Bill's, the character mindset of like temptation and being hurt and faithfulness. Because again, like you said, where it's like, does Tom Cruise have any actual sexual chemistry with anyone? He has all these sexual moments that are so not sexual in a way. Like he gets right up there and then doesn't. So yeah, I would say this movie, there was not that at all. In fact, Nicole Kidman, I mean, literally starts the movie completely nude. You just see her ass on screen.
Not a bad first scene, Kayla.
Not a bad first scene. I gotta say, there have been worse first scenes. So
Kubrick may have been a weirdo. We don't know.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So I definitely like, I love a lot of other Kubrick films. Of course, The Shining. I've not seen 2001: A Space Odyssey, but that's been on my list for a while. Just
Kayla?
Yep.
I'm going to just say something. I've never seen The Shining or 2001: A Space Odyssey.
I know why you haven't seen
Full
The Shining. Shut up. Yeah. You've never seen...
Or A Clockwork Orange.
Stop!
So I've seen like none
you have
of
to
Kubrick's.
Stop. Pot over. What?
Sorry, I don't know. I just, they got past me, I guess. They came out in the 80s. All right,
I love A Clockwork Orange. Oh my goodness. But Full Metal Jacket. I love Full Metal Jacket. I've seen that movie a million times, especially with my dad. So that is a fucked up movie. I mean, often Kubrick films are completely fucked up. But like, I love the music tones, even in this movie. I know, like, if I didn't know he directed this film, as soon as I heard those tones, I would have been like, oh, definitely a Kubrick movie. Just it's so similar in how he does the music too, and these just intense. I mean, The Shining especially is full of those like piano tones, you know, where Jack Nicholson just goes mad. But all in all, this film, it was very entertaining. I definitely, you know, I always struggle in the abstract, Justin, you know, like I do like to know where things are going, and when things got so absurd.
I was
going to
ask you, do you like the open-ended kind of theory type movies or no?
I think it was like almost like the dream weirdness of the film was based in so much reality that for me it was easier to just kind of take as like, maybe that this does appear to be some sort of dream. Like I kind of lean more towards the dream fantasy dream world that this movie is in than in actual, like, this is what happened. Then other movies, you know, where things get so absurd and you're like, I don't know what is this fucking movie doing? You know, like a Vanilla Sky. Like I was able to follow this pretty well and okay. just take my own interpretation. So I did enjoy this film. It's not all what I thought it was going to be, yeah. For sure. But it was, I'm glad to have this, like, you know, I saw it finally because this is a very celebrated film.
And it's so weird because it's such a celebrated film. But one of the theories out there with Kubrick, why he did so many takes and didn't really give them a lot of direction and they were kind of rewriting on set the whole time. One of the theories is that he did so many takes so that he could use the bad ones in certain spots so that it seems kind of disjointed and like not like as fluid of a story as you may think. So who knows? He obviously passed away, so we'll never know for sure. But I do like having just kind of those talking points of like, what did he actually mean with this? Did he actually do this? Or are we all just galaxy braining this and overthinking what Kubrick did and the performances were just weird? Seems unlikely, but just, I'm glad you saw it, Kayla. We both watched it for the first time this year and I don't know why, but there it is.
I do love that you're saying galaxy brain. That's great. We need to use that more.
I just get weird phrases stuck in my head, and then I realize I repeat them for like 2 weeks, and then I move on to a new phrase.
You do. That's, I love you for it. So, yeah, that's my review of Eyes Wide Shut. Justin, are you ready for A Violent Night?
Let's go. All right, Violent Night, one of the newer Christmas movies that came out in 2022, directed by Tommy Wirkola, written by Pat Casey and Josh Miller. $20 million budget, did about $76 million gross worldwide. So not a big winner, but it also kind of came out in the streaming age, so it's really tough to tell. And Rotten Tomatoes, I believe it had a 78 on Rotten Tomatoes, so pretty high for a movie of this caliber. A little under 2 hours, an hour and 52 minutes. It has a little bit of an interesting cast here. We had David Harbour, famous for Stranger Things, being the sheriff. He plays Santa, which I thought was a really good casting with how this movie played out. So that was a lot of fun. And then we had John Leguizamo, who is just off the rails ridiculous in this movie, which I really liked. And then Beverly D'Angelo was Gertrude. So there was a lot of kind of cool side performances. But if you don't have David Harbour and John Leguizamo, it goes in a completely different direction, I think. I think you needed a couple of those actors to kind of anchor this film. So a couple of kind of fun facts about this movie. There's a character called Morgan Steele, who's kind of like a tool douchebaggy husband to you know, the sister of the main character. He is loosely based on Mark Wahlberg. I don't know if you knew that. So he makes a lot of comments like, you know, if I was on those planes in 9/11, I would have been able to take them down and save everybody, which Mark Wahlberg famously had something close to that he said years ago. And apparently there is a sequel in the works, Kayla. So I'm not quite sure where that goes, but that's the last thing I read was they're working on a sequel of Violent Night. Apparently just, like you said, a John Wick Santa Claus type character here, which is just a fun way to kind of think about the movie. And a quick kind of description is you have this Santa Claus who has to go around delivering these gifts. He doesn't know if he still believes kind of in the Christmas spirit, and then he gets thrown into the middle of a like a mercenary robbery, essentially. And how does he react? So that is all I got for the front end stuff. You want to count me down, Kayla?
Yes. Here we go. And 3, 2, 1.
Seasonal Santa Claus getting hammered at a bar. Doesn't see the purpose of Christmas anymore. Oh shit. He's the real Santa. He leaves with his reindeer, vomits all over the bartender. Cut to Marriage on the Rocks with young daughter Trudy. Go to super rich mother's compound with asshole relatives. Santa delivering gifts and drunkenly passes out in the house. Mercenaries with Christmas themed code names breaking. Hilarious. Gruesome murders everywhere. A lot gorier than I thought. Hold family hostage to get access to a vault with $300 million in unmarked bills. Daughter Trudy thinks she's talking to Santa on a walkie talkie. Ridiculous. Santa contemplates leaving, then hears the walkie talkie and stealthily moves around the house, murdering the bad guys, and actually starts talking to Trudy on the walkie walkie-talkie. Rich Bomb triggers emergency response team, but gets caught on the way to the safe room. Emergency response team is called the Kill Squad. They show up. Oh, shit, they're in on it. They get the safe open, but there's no money there. Trudy runs away and hides in the attic, making a ton of noise, but nobody notices, I guess. Weird. She sets up a whole bunch of Home Alone-style traps, which are pretty badass. Santa used to be a Viking? What? Then savagely murders the entire Kill Squad in a barn with basically I can't even keep a straight face anymore. Anyway, the son actually stole the money curveball. A couple bad guys survive and find it, then get killed along with Santa. Christmas magic saves Santa because everybody believes in his now. Marriage is saved by bonding over murdering the bad guys. The end.
Okay, I'm going to remove 5 seconds of laughter because I totally get it. You're just over a minute. I'd say like a minute and two.
I'm sorry. I could not keep a straight face when I said Santa used to be a Viking and then savagely murdered the entire Kill Squad in a barn with a sledgehammer.
That's like, not in the stories of Santa, but that's just history. You know what I mean?
that's history. Santa's a Viking. This movie, Kayla, was nothing like I thought. It was a lot gorier, a lot more intense. I did not think it was going to be the real Santa Claus. Like, he's literally with reindeer. I thought it was going to be like,
same.
Like I said in the beginning, like a seasonal Santa that
yes.
saves a kid or something, you know, and murders the bad guys. But that was not it at all.
I thought the same thing. I thought it was like, maybe he was in the military and now he's like, has to work as like a mall Santa or something. And then he like discovers a crime plot. And so the fact that he actually had magic and was Santa, I go, uh-oh, this is not the movie I thought it was.
Not at all. And it is one that, it lets you know early on with the vomiting all over the bartender. He's getting hammered at the bar. Okay, this is going to be ridiculous. You need to just lean into it and have fun. You're not, you know, I didn't watch this with like a very like heavy eye of like, oh, what type of scenes do they do here? What types of this? No, it was just have fun, sit down, enjoy yourself watching the movie. The dialogue and exposition were just insane. There's that one point where the main character who's not Santa, I should say, he is the son of this super wealthy, rich person who runs whatever the hell she runs. Basically, it seems like a Fox News. I don't know what she is, but she's just crazy billionaire status. And he is a privileged son. And his wife is like, oh, I wish we can get out from under your mother's thumb. And it's caused a rift in the marriage. But he still wants to work for the family business. So that's kind of the through line kind of okay, they don't really like the mother, but they need her because they're so reliant on that type of lifestyle. And the son is really secretly trying to steal the $300 million to run away with his wife. Why not just steal $100 million? You couldn't get away with 50? $50 million? $100 million? He steals the entire $300 million. Ridiculous. To save his marriage. Again, I don't understand. But at one point, if you didn't really know what this movie was about, there's a line. He goes, oh, you think I went months planning this break-in and I didn't know that your family lived here and you had $300 million in unmarked bills locked in your safe downstairs? Okay, thank you for just outlining the entire plot of this movie in two sentences. Could have been a little bit more subtle here, Leguizamo, right? It was kind of all over the place. The mercenaries come in. The code names I thought were pretty funny. So we had Leguizamo was Scrooge, because of course. We had Gingerbread Krampus, who was kind of the comedic element. He didn't care. He's ready to like murder kids. Who cares? Candy Cane, who's like a badass woman. There's Frosty, Tinsel, Peppermint, Sugar Plum. Like, so just having those where they're like, Gingerbread's down. Oh, I haven't heard from Frosty in a minute. Okay, Scrooge. Like, it's just, it added one extra like element to the fun of it, Kayla.
When they like do their first introductions, right? They're doing like the typical in lots of action movies where they're like, code name, are you there? And they're just like running down each. So it's each person checking in on their walkie talkie, Gingerbread here, you know, Tinsel, Jingle. And like, you're just getting the sense that they all have these Christmas themed names. It's just so ridiculous. I go, okay, this is gonna be quite the comedy here. And they kill, like you said, it is so gory. The kills are wild. I mean, right away from the vomit, like you said, on the bar, which it was disgusting. And then just like him being like, fuck, when the reindeers like fly off after getting scared away, and then he's like, kill people, and he's just like, oh, like, you know, he just wants to get on his sleigh and go. It's just so funny to me. Like, just great.
It was a lot of fun, I will say. I had a lot more fun than I thought watching this. And we had the dynamic with Santa and the younger daughter, Trudy, where she's hiding in the attic, like I said, and she sets up these Home Alone traps. And the cool part was, like, the bad guys see it, and they're like, oh, this stupid idiot kid put a nail on the stair. I'm not going to fall for that. And she says earlier, like, she just watched Home Alone. So she's, like, excited to essentially murder these people, which doesn't seem likely for, like, a 10-year-old girl, but whatever. And the guy notices it, but he doesn't notice that she also apparently sawed one of the steps in half and nobody noticed. So he steps on that. It gets a nail through his jaw, then falls backward onto a bed of nails. And then a whole bunch of bowling balls, they just have like 12 bowling balls in the attic, start rolling down and hitting him while he's down. I'm like, what is happening here? This is hilarious. And then when Santa is basically like, oh man, the kill squad's here. I don't think I'm going to be able to save you. I'm sorry. We're all going to die, to the girl, which is a little rough. She goes, I believe in you, Santa. You can do it. You can murder all these bad guys. And he's hiding in this barn. He finds a sledgehammer, which brings him back to his Viking days 1,100 years ago when he used to savagely just like rape and pillage towns. Santa, you know, typical Santa backstory, right? And he takes this sledgehammer, obliterates these guys. He kills them. There's a candy cane murder. There's he puts a grenade in somebody. The guy just completely blows off. He jabs a star for like the top of a tree through somebody's eye socket and then plugs it in and then melts the guy's face. It burns alive. Like, what has happened? He obliterates a guy pulling him through a chimney. He takes an ice skate and chops a guy's head off. Like, this is legit gory, Kayla.
It's so gory. And, you know, I'm happy to have maybe a little horror slasher elements. It's the way I can smuggle, basically. I'm trying to smuggle in maybe some fun horror elements to a film to get you to see it. And this was as slashery as you can get while still being a Christmas movie. I mean, like you said, every death was just so... And it was like from his reluctantness, like in that first fight in the house, to be like, oh, like, I just want to leave. Like, I don't have to kill you. Like, you do your thing. Like, I'm just going to let you just rob these people. And then he's just like getting pulled in as he realizes what's happening there on the naughty list. Like, so funny.
And then like the theme of this family with crazy amount of wealth, right? You have the one guy with the daughter who he's been the favorite, but he wants to get out from underneath it. So he steals the money. His sister's a tool who just like sucks up to the mother. Her husband's that idiot Mark Wahlberg kind of loosely spinoff that I mentioned before, which the mom at one point calls him Jean-Claude Van Dipshit, which I thought was hilarious. So, and he just gets murdered when the kill squad shows up because he thinks they're the good guys. And then at the end, the mom like looks at the son and is just like, I'm proud of you for stealing that $300 million from me because you took what you wanted. And he's like, oh, so that's how I gained your respect, by stealing all of this money out of your vault and then causing mercenaries to break in and murder your entire staff and some of our family. That's how I had to gain your respect. It just was great. I think the side actors, especially the main guy that wasn't Santa, what the hell was his name? I had it written down and I can't find it. Oh, Alex Hassel is the actor. He played Jason. I thought he was just terrible. I didn't like him as an actor at all. He looks very similar to another guy, but I can't think of the name. Like, he looks so identical to somebody
else. I didn't watch this show, but he was in The Boys, so.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, he is in The Boys. And his Dark Materials. Don't you watch that, too?
His Dark Materials, yeah. I love that show.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, he's in that.
And at one point, they threatened to, they basically broke off one of his fingers with a nutcracker. And then the bad guy goes, you know, it's called a nutcracker for a reason. Bring them over here and throw those bad boys in. And he's like, what? No, like, I was like, what is, they're going to just straight put, yeah, I'm not going to get into too much more detail on how the Nutcracker was going to operate. I think the name tells you all you need to know on that one, Kayla.
Yeah, listen to the extra rated R episode of Wrong Opinions Only, where we'll go into that description. Yeah, this was just a wild movie. I remember, like, because we all the time we're at the theaters, I remember seeing the poster for this and being like, this looks like such a crazy movie. At the time, I was like, I don't think I need to sit in a theater for this, but I'm glad we got to see it this year because it was, you know, a fitting start of the Christmas season, Christmas movies between Eyes Wide Shut and Violent Night, unhingedness, if you will.
Yeah, I think that was a good mix as opposed to like Eyes Wide Shut with a Christmas Story. A little bit of different themes there. So I'm glad we kind of went off the rails on this one. I do love kind of a drunk Santa. That's like a solid trope for me. Like, get a hammered Santa who doesn't know if he wants to keep doing it. And the end was way over the top corny, like, oh, they all believe, so he comes back to life. I will say one of the things I like throughout the film is that he keeps referencing, like, yeah, there's this Christmas magic. And he goes, I have no fucking idea how it works. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't know, man. I've only been doing this for 1,100 years. But sometimes I can come back to life, sometimes I can't. Who knows? So at least they just leaned into the absurdity after a certain point, and I had a great time.
And that's all we can ask for when we're watching these Christmas movies, you know, especially when they tend to be repeaters. We wanted two movies that stood out, and I think we definitely accomplished that between these two films. So, Justin, what would you rate Violent Night out of 5 VHS tapes?
Honestly, I gave this 3.5 VHS tapes. This All right. is just a fun sit down, hang out, watch it, and don't worry about the bad dialogue or nope. the absurdity.
No, nope. absolutely not. Okay, great. I'm going to give Eyes Wide Shut 3 out of 5 VHS tapes. I'm glad to have seen it, like, for my first watch. Mm-hmm. I was head with it, but I don't think I'd return to this film. I don't think of Kubrick's films. I would go back to Full Metal Jacket and The Shining, and I do probably every year. But Eyes Wide Shut, I don't think
rewatchable, Kayla.
No, no, great at the first time, but not a rewatchable. You're right. All right, shall we get to our Swirly of the Week?
Okay, Kayla, I have 2 Swirlies of the Week this week because I just need to do it because there's 2 stories that I saw that were absurd, and I didn't want to give you a sports one that's mixed with business or finance that your eyes would just glaze over on. So I'm going to start with Tesla. Tesla is my swirly of the week. I think Elon Musk is officially just has lost his damn mind. The new Cybertruck that I'm sure everybody has seen kind of promoted out there, it has a clause in its purchase agreement that allows Tesla to sue buyers if they try to resell the truck within a year of the purchase for up to $50,000. So the clause basically states that if they do want to sell within the first year, they need to give Tesla the first offer at a discounted price or they are at risk of being sued and could be banned from owning any type of Tesla product in the future. What type of insane shit is that? Like, I know, like, for these really high-end cars, there's like clauses like that, so it's not like buy and resell and it kind of dilutes the value of them that way. But I mean, you're going to sue somebody because they want to resell your truck in a year and they have to go back to you at a super discounted price. Like, what type of nonsense is this, Kayla? I just think it's completely, especially in today's economy, we're going to go with that. Like, people, like, cars are costing crazy amounts of money. Interest rates are high right now. I mean, the NASDAQ did hit an all-time high the other day, but still, interest rates are high, so you have to pay twice as much for a car now than you did 4 years ago.
True story. Have you seen the latest movie on Netflix, The Leave the World Behind yet?
No, I was going to watch it last night, but my wife wants to watch it with me, so we're probably waiting until like Sunday or Monday.
Okay. Let me know your thoughts because there's some Tesla, I think, drops in the... There is for sure in this film.
I saw in the trailer that there's a whole bunch of Tesla cars that basically got hacked and were like on the side of the road or something.
Yeah, but, so funny to me.
You know, I really want a Tesla and I have for a while. And frankly, the insanity of Musk the last, basically since he bought Twitter, is diluting my interest in buying a Tesla. Not that I have any money to buy one right now anyway, but it just has diluted the brand a little bit for me.
I was wondering that.
My second swirly of the week, I am going to make it a quick one. Shohei Ohtani's contract. Have you seen this, Kayla? Shohei Ohtani, Japanese baseball player, signed the richest deal in baseball history, in American sports history, $700 million for 10 years. So $70 million a year, guaranteed money, just absolutely insane. But he also pitches and he's one of the best hitters in the league. So he's like a modern day Babe Ruth, but better. So it's an interesting contract because he recently got injured and he's not going to be able to pitch at least for 1 year, but he went to the Dodgers and they have a shit ton of money. The reason it is a swirly of the week is he deferred $680 million out of the $700 million for 10 years. So he is only going to get paid $2 million a year for the first 10 years of this contract, which is when he's playing with the Dodgers. So it gives them more kind of cap room to sign other guys. Then he's going to make $68 million a year for the next 10 years after that. So he can retire in 10 years and he's still going to be making $68 million a year after. Now, at first, a lot of people were saying, this seems pretty smart because he's trying to get out of California taxes if he's not going to be in America in 10 years. And he could go back to Japan where it's a much lower tax rate and he could kind of figure it out and save himself money. My thought on this, though, is he's costing himself probably a couple $100 million in this decision. Because if you're not taking that $68 million upfront right now, investing it, gaining interest on it, making your money work for you, you are losing future value. You know what I mean? So if you have $68 million, you put it in the stock market in 10 years, that could be worth like $300-400 million. But if you wait, you're just giving up all of those potential gains. Or even if it's like in a say 5% interest bond or something, you're making money on it. And this whole thing is with zero interest rates. So he's not getting paid any interest for doing this.
What country is he from?
Know why he would do it.
Did you say?
Japan.
Oh.
Japan has like 0% interest rates. So maybe him and his agent weren't as concerned because in his home country, you wouldn't have made money off of it. But you could have put that in an easy bond here in America and made a ton of money off of it. And I just read I did some quick math on an article that I was looking at here. And if you're making $68 million a year in 11 years, but you didn't earn any interest on it, in today's dollars, that's only like 40 to 50 million bucks. So you're losing right off the bat almost $20 to $30 million because it's not making money for you. And I just thought that was kind of a really weird move. He makes about $50 million a year in endorsements because he is like Japan's most well-known. He's well-known player and he's one of America's most well-known baseball players. He's a freaking superstar. But I mean, financially, it doesn't seem like a very smart decision to me. And I thought they could have did better.
I'm not sure because of just my mere small knowledge of sports history, but was it, I could be China I'm thinking of, but isn't there a country that like requires you, even if you're working in the US, to give your home country money? Like, isn't there a basketball player that like had to give like a crazy amount of his salary back to, it was like a basketball player.
I think that was Cuba. I think it was like,
no, see, I thought it was like the, he's super tall. Oh my goodness. I'm so bad at like calling up that. Where's my dad would be just yelling.
China
right
maybe?
Now. I want to say China. Yeah. It was something that like he like had so many rules on his career and finances that he give it back. I was just curious. I go, that would kind of make sense if I had to give a portion of my salary back home, you know, for governmental reasons to maybe, you know, up to a certain point, kind of be lower to give less. I don't know. But
I like vaguely remember what you're mentioning. And yeah. It probably would be a Chinese player.
It probably
like
would. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because Japan's a little closer to kind of like our economic model than China. Okay. China's, you know, more of like a,
that's true. They're, you know, they're, yeah, only governmental TV and kind of all that stuff. But yeah, that's not the pod for this. That's our governmental pod coming out next week. Okay. Great Swirlies, I should say, Justin. Where should I go for my swirly? Well, I did want to give a swirly to a film that you mentioned you hadn't seen yet. So I think it would almost be a spoiler to mention this character and Leave the World Behind, because I just feel like people were not seeing her for the person that she is, because I related a lot to this character in the movie. So you tell me if you can identify her when you do see it with Chet.
Is it Mayala from Industry?
No, but I did.
I love her.
Yeah, yes, I know you do. And I think Industry is coming out next year for you too. So exciting news for you. Okay. The Iron Claw to me is one of, I think I'm the film I'm most looking forward to this month coming out as we kind of bring 2023 to a year. I think The Iron Claw could maybe work its way to my top five. It's an interesting story. Even I don't have like the wrestling kind of history or nostalgia or anything like that, but it's, maybe it's because it's like one of the most tragic stories as well, just based off of the brothers and everything that happened. But I did notice like in my research of the movie and it was coming out that it wasn't including all of the family members in this film. Like it's a wrestling family, but like a brother is left out. And this is a movie about brothers. And like the whole concept, the trailers are all about the brothers and this togetherness and obviously a lot of the tragedies that happened in this family. And so I was like, wait, how did they not include one entire brother in the story? And finally the filmmaker is kind of like touching on it because it is such a like a weird, totally like not even mentioned that this brother existed. And it's because they just felt like it's such a tragic story that they didn't want to kind of include another tragedy amongst his brother. But I just find it so odd in a, you know, movie like this, you know, biopic that's about this family and the highs and a lot of lows that they went through, to just like kind of leave out a person, a whole brother, you know, that went through stuff too. So I just find that so, I guess I understand. I think if that came from like the family itself, but at that point I would be like, I wouldn't want to make the movie. You know, I mean, again, I'm not in the mix of this story, but it just seems so odd to me to do like
that. It's a weird move.
Yeah. Super weird move, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. It's like weird to tell other story and not his, because you had too much sadness, one could say. So I'll be curious how the movie goes and if that seems like super apparent, but that just really stuck odd to me, because you don't see that a lot where a movie's about a family, a real family and their history, and like leaves out an entire family member, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if it had something to do with the rights and the one brother was like, you know, I don't want to be a part of this or something. I don't know. It just seems like if you're going to tell the story, tell the whole story, right? So.
Yeah, and the filmmaker's like, he just couldn't withstand another, you know, sad event, and that from a narrative and character standpoint, there's a repetition that's hard to take. And it's like, but that's what happened, you know, that like, regardless of whether you're seeing on the screen, it's what happened.
It's too sad for the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly, it's like, we keep seeing, you know, this happened to all of them. So we didn't want it to happen again. I go, but it did happen. You know, it did. That's the story, you know? So just wild take. All right. Shall we get to our friendship question of the week?
Yeah, so this week, Kayla, I asked you, are there any family Christmas traditions that you have?
You know, they've definitely changed over the years. I feel like from like childhood to kind of like adult, when you're kind of coming together with your family or families. We definitely used to do like a big Christmas Eve party, which has changed obviously post-COVID and just trying to get everyone together, you know. But honestly, we watch a lot of movies. Like, we're in our pajamas. In fact, I brought this up to some of my coworkers. I'm like, do you guys get dressed on Christmas Day, or are you like in your pajamas all day? And it's, to me, it's pajamas, it's sweats, it's a lazy morning, you eat late. It's like, we're not worried about dinner because you're snacking throughout, and we watch a lot of movies. Unfortunately for me, that does mean no subtitles, because none of my family can agree on watching subtitles to
films. This is a shout to your family. Mm-hmm. You need the subtitles, people. They're key for everything, except for like live TV. You need subtitles.
Yes, agree. Team subtitles. So I think that's really kind of our staple now. Is just like and occasionally we attempt to play games, but sometimes it's hard to be like, let's go open up this board game. You know, what about you?
Yeah. So with my family, we have a Christmas Eve party at my grandma's house every year. Obviously, now since I've been married to my wife, we have to do the, you know, Christmas this year with your family, next year with mine, and then we swap Thanksgiving for the alternate years. But I'm just going to kind of stick to my family traditions. And one of them is opening up a gift the night before on Christmas Eve, which most of the time is some type of pajamas for you to wear the following day. I feel like that's kind of a common one, because I'm with you. We're in pajamas most of Christmas Day. And Christmas, quote unquote, morning, ever since like at least my brother was past like the really young age where he wanted to get up at like 5 a.m., we like open presents and do everything pretty late. Like, we're like noon, like early afternoon. And the thing is, I'll go over to my mom's house with my brother, and my mom, I'll like work with her. Most of the time it's her making this big brunch for us and kind of talking, hanging out, like you said, snacking. My brother kind of organizes all the gifts for who's got what as I sit there and watch basketball, because Christmas Day is a big basketball day. So that is what we have on the TV. The problem is, these damn nieces of mine, who I love, now we got to have kids stuff on. Are you kidding me? Like, we need the basketball on the TV. We don't need kids movies. It's not Christmas without an NBA game, Kayla. So I don't know. But I think when Chit and I have, you know, kind of start our own family here, we will kind of pick the traditions that we want to carry through and try to have it more of an at-home feel for us, where we have Christmas morning at home, and then maybe Christmas Eve is when we head out to our families. Because it becomes a lot when it's, all right, I got to hit my family's Christmas Eve party, my mom Christmas morning, I got to find a way to get over to my dad's, we got to get over to my wife's family, either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. And there's just so much moving around when I just really want to eliminate as much of that as I can once we actually have our own family up and running here, you know?
I agree. You kind of create the memories of like Christmas at your house, right? Like sleeping in your bed, coming downstairs or wherever, seeing the gifts under your tree. Like you start to have those memories. And especially when you start to have like ornaments for your kids. And so it's like, it becomes your family tree in a bit. And then, you know, it's fun also to go to other, I feel like as a kid, I always enjoyed going to other people's houses that day or like maybe earlier, because I another tradition I'm wondering, I was not allowed to open presents Christmas Eve, like ever. My dad would not allow it. It was Christmas Day. So even if relatives were like coming in town or we were visiting like my dad's family, we had to take them and bring them home. He wouldn't let us like open it in front of other people. And my aunt Tracy actually like always would try to like, do it. And I'm like, I'm not getting the wrath of my dad. He's very like, yeah, Christmas. So we did not, other than like you said, pajamas, if we would get them, we were not able to open up any gifts. How about you?
Well, Christmas Eve, the party at my grandma's house, we'd have gifts from like that side of the family. So my grandma, my cousins, like uncles and stuff like that. But I wouldn't open up any gifts from my mom or my dad until Christmas Day, you know? So we kind of had it separated that way, where you get something, but then you wait until you get to my mom's house Christmas morning for all of the major stuff.
Yeah, I think it's because my dad wanted the most out of the tree. So he's like, nope, aunt's gifts are going here. Cousin's gifts going
honestly,
here.
Honestly, a smart move. Build that density up around the tree.
I think that's exactly it. I mean, even like now as adults, he's still kind of like, nope, wait till Christmas. So, and I wish I could stay up till noon, but, or I guess get up around then. But my sister, despite being 26 now, is still like a child at heart, and she'll get you up at 7 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think my brother used to do that, but we got to a certain point where I think there was one year where we both slept in past noon and we just kind of like walked downstairs to the point where my mom was like, you guys need to get up. It's Christmas morning. Like, what are you doing? But when we were a lot younger, it'd be like, let's stay up all night. Maybe we'll run downstairs and see what's going on. And my mom would be like, you stay upstairs in Justin's room. Nobody's allowed down, because she needed to wrap every single present.
Oh, my God. So that is so the same. Like, my mom, my parents, and my aunt, like, they'd be like, it's bedtime. Go upstairs. And then they were all, like, drinking wine. Now, as an adult, I know that they were drinking wine, wrapping gifts. And, like, they would be watching. Like, if you try to sneak down in the middle of the night, someone would be downstairs and be like, get your ass back upstairs all the time. So funny.
You got to keep the mystery alive. I never quite understood the, like, I'm gonna search through my house to see if I can find the Christmas gifts and see what I got. I want to be surprised. I want to open up this stuff Christmas morning. I don't want to know what I'm getting. Like, maybe if I request like one or two specific things, but I mean, we're at the age, right, Kayla, where we probably buy most of the shit that we want for ourselves anyway. So my mom's always like, what do you want? And I'll be like, maybe I can think of one or two things, but whatever. You're usually pretty good at it. Figure it out and I'll be happy with pretty much anything.
I feel the same way. Like, there's not many gifts that I'm like, oh, this is bad. Like, between gift cards, whatever creative I ask for, like, I don't care. So that's funny. But I'm with you. I want to be surprised. Like, I don't want to know beforehand, even as a kid.
Yeah, because we are good human beings.
We are good. We are on the nice list, Anna. So don't be coming out here as a mercenary to get us, because we are on the nice list. So just saying.
That was one thing I forgot about Violent Night. He would occasionally pull out his scroll, which just would say whoever was near him, if they were on the naughty or nice list, and like what they did to be on that list. So that was kind of a funny
That was fun. That was a fun gag. I love it. All right, guys. Like I said, this episode is coming out on Christmas. So however you celebrate, please enjoy the day, hopefully with your family, eating lots of goodies. All right. So as always, we'll see you next week.
Well, that's it for this episode of Wrong Opinions Only. Please follow us on Instagram at Wrong Opinions Only and on Twitter at Wrong Opinions JK, where we'll be dropping some clues and hints to upcoming episodes. Until then, JK out.